Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome inside the Celtics Lab podcast. I'm Justin McQuinn of Celtics Wire with Alex Goldberg of Off the Glass, and we're going to talk all things Media Week with special guest John Corrales of Mass Live. Particularly, how worried we should be about Kemba Walker's knee and how much we're going to love Tristan Thompson. Most importantly, we're going to hear about his new book, Corrales's, not Tristan's, and we'll get into that shortly. Welcome to the show, John. How are you doing?
I appreciate you having me. Thank you.
So, we've got some stuff to talk about. Some news has happened since we've potted last. One of the, you know, the big signing of the offseason here, Amile Jefferson, has signed an Exhibit 10 contract. What is an Exhibit 10 contract? I mean, should we be expecting to see
on
the team?
An Exhibit 10 contract basically means that you're here to get cut and go to the main Red Claws, get a little extra bonus for going to the main Red Claws. It's a developmental contract that allows a team a closer look at a player who may not quite be NBA ready, but has an intriguing skill set, and that player can go to that team's G League team and further develop, and then from there, perhaps hook on with the team. But the thing about the Exhibit 10 is it does allow for a player to get away. It's not control of a player for a year. It's basically we're giving you a little extra. We want to develop you. We want to see what you got. And maybe you can come out of this as a member of the Celtics. But if he goes to the G League and kills it, and the Detroit Pistons say, hey, we like this kid, they have an opportunity to offer him a contract and he can go.
And, you know, God knows the Pistons could use more centers. So,
yeah, I mean, that's the Pistons just hoarding all the bigs. I don't know what the Pistons are doing this year, but, you know, hey.
I think the right way to think about this contract is that this is an added bonus to the Jason Tatum max extension. Amile Jefferson and Tatum were, of course, teammates at Duke. They appear to be friends in real life. In fact, Tatum actually tweeted. A tweet about signing Amile Jefferson after he played well in a game in Europe. So I think that's kind of this is the Celtics taking care of Jason in more ways than just financially.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, we're now getting into the portion of Celtics team building where you see stuff that appeases their star, you know, like there's the teardown and, you know, the Sam Presti hoarding the picks. We've seen that. There's the flipping assets for, you know, better players and getting that those, you know, making those draft picks, realizing those draft picks. And now that one of those draft picks has hit into a potential MVP player, now it's like, okay, Jason, do you know how much we love you? Oh, Emil. Oh, we've loved him forever. Yeah, we were going to sign him anyway, so you didn't have to say anything. Like, that type of stuff is what we're going to start seeing over the next few years, because Tatum not only signed that extension, he's got a player option for that fifth year. And, you know, that's one less year under team control. So, you know, hey, when he opts out of that, are we going to have another Hayward-Horford type of situation? Or are we going to have what Anthony Davis just did with the Lakers and sign another contract long-term?
Sounds like he's pretty happy, at least now. And this sort of thing is definitely good for keeping him happy.
Yeah.
But
everybody's happy when they sign a $200 million contract.
I mean, how can you not be?
True.
There were some other things going on this week in the East. I'm not really sure how much it's going to impact either team or the East in particular, but maybe, you know, it'll make, depending on how it works out, The East a little bit tougher in the middle of the pack anyway. And I'm speaking specifically about the John Wall, Russell Westbrook trade. What are our thoughts on how that might impact the East?
I think, so one thing that, you know, comes to mind is obviously the Wizards were kind of right on the verge of making the playoffs last year and couldn't do it. And that was without John Wall for the second of a season that he missed entirely because of injury. So in the short term, you have to think Russell Westbrook, say what you will about him, you know, he's had his ups and downs, but he's still a pretty darn good NBA player. And I have to think that that would boost their chances for making the Eastern Conference playoffs as maybe a 7 or 8 seed this year. But I think the bigger effects on the Eastern Conference have less to do with what the Wizards are going to look like this year and more to do with what the Wizards are going to look like in the long-term future. If Westbrook continues to be a super high usage point guard with taking a ton of shot attempts and perhaps not in the most efficient or team-friendly manner, and if this doesn't work out as well as maybe I think the Wizards front office is hoping, then I think this move could certainly open the door to Bradley Beal getting moved down the line.
I agree with that. I think this has the potential. I think they might have made this move with hopes of keeping Beal, and it could certainly backfire because Beal needs the ball in his hands and Westbrook needs the ball in his hands. And the thing about the Wizards this year is they've got shooting on the floor around Westbrook, and they'll have space and he'll have space. He was an all NBA player this past season. So, and with space to operate, he is going to attack. Now, what does that mean for Beal? Does that create more space for Beal to operate? Then he might be happy with this. You know, Westbrook using a spread pick and roll to get to the rim, and then at some point turning and flipping a pass out to Beal, who can then cycle in behind him and get to the rim himself or get some open space to shoot some threes. If Beal finds himself playing off of Westbrook and enjoying the space that creates, then maybe that does work out for the Wizards. I do think that this does push the Wizards potentially into the playoff hunt. And you got to remember that the Wizards, the playoffs this year, it's a play-in. So it's, you don't have to be the 8th seed. You can be 9th or 10th and still have a shot at the playoffs. So the Wizards are certainly in the top 10 in the East, but they may even be a little further up, 6th or 7th. So they really can make some noise if these things work out offensively and Westbrook can gel with Bradley Beal.
So besides that, there's other issues that may affect how the playoff race shakes out, and chief among them may be how available players are as they come back to their teams. We're seeing 8.8, I believe, positivity rates for COVID. And that's not a huge boost, but in the same general neighborhood, I think it was 7.1% ahead of the restart positivity rates for players. Now, considering that everything is very condensed into a shorter period, it seems to me that we may be in a situation where if someone has to sit for, you know, even just the minimum 10 days, you could easily miss like a significant portion of the year's schedule, maybe even as much as 10% of it, depending on how the case goes. Should we be concerned about this kind of like level of positivity rate? I mean, some of the players like Marcus Smart doing his media, I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but Marcus Smart said that he was pretty happy with how the league has been conducting its coronavirus protocol. But I mean, there's some real potential for disaster, isn't there?
I think so. I'm not a big fan of the way things are going, but I also understand that they weren't going to go back into the bubble. That was mentally taxing and financially taxing for the league. It was just not sustainable for a full season. Now, if they get through the regular season and they find themselves kind of struggling to get through the regular season and just make it, they may set up a playoff bubble. That's always a possibility. And I think for the sake of keeping things fair and healthy, like that could be something that they do, but that's a short time. So that might be more, both sides might be more amenable to something like that. But we're talking about young people who think they're invincible no matter what. And they're going from city to city and they're going to be bored. And so they're going to take chances that they think they can get away with. And some of them are going to expose themselves because it's too rampant. So if anybody, you know, you go to New York, you spend, 4 days in New York playing a Knicks Brooklyn, back to back. I can't imagine that those guys are going to sit inside and read all night. You know, even if there are curfews, even if there are things that are shut down. New York, I used to live in New York. You can find anything you want in New York at any time of day, no matter what. And these guys with their resources will find it. So it's going to be an issue this year. And Luka Doncic, I think, had the best quote of the preseason where this basically he was asked, who can come out on top? And he says, the team that doesn't have COVID cases. That's what we're looking at. Because like you said, guys can be out, even asymptomatic guys can be out for 2 weeks. So you're talking about a guy 2 weeks out, and then you still have to pass a myriad of tests. You have to pass cardiac tests to come back. That if it sweeps through one team, I don't know how the league is going to react. But if it hits a couple of guys on the team, if it's Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum and Marcus Smart, all three of them are in the same place at the same time, what happens to the Celtics? It's their three best players. So that's going to be tough. And I want to see how the league handles that.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting. I'm thankful that Grant Williams is on this team for a lot of different reasons, but one of them is that Grant can organize a nice Catan party in the hotel room and
board game night.
Exactly. Do some fun, wholesome activities that don't involve going outside.
I don't see Marcus Smart playing Catan.
Maybe. We'll see. I think it is a really serious issue. And I think, if we're comparing to other leagues and how they've handled this, obviously the bubble was kind of the best case scenario for how this can work out. But you have to take into account that coronavirus is, of course, spreading more rapidly now than it was then by a substantial degree all across the country. In addition, the NFL is currently undergoing a whole lot of issues as a result of coronavirus. We're having, last week, for example, the Broncos had to call up a third string wide receiver to play quarterback for them. They just lost that game. So I definitely agree there are going to be some issues where teams will lose large chunks of critical players that we just have to factor that into this year. And I think perhaps even more concerning is that, for all of the stuff that we do know about COVID-19, we still really don't know much about the long-term effects on people's right. health. And obviously, these guys are young and in their physical primes and have a lot of money and access to elite healthcare. But, there are stories of people suffering severe long-term lung damage as a result of this. And I think that's, there's an issue there both with kind of player health and length of careers and also with contracts. A lot of these dudes coming up next season in a couple of seasons from now are going to be available for huge contracts, and they're going to need to be have their best long-term health outlook possible going into those years. So I think it's going to be challenging. I think you could start to see maybe some labor issues as well. We'll just have to see how it plays out, and hopefully a vaccine is ready to go sooner rather than later.
Well, the C's put out their schedule, speaking specifically to how condensed some of these games are going to be. And it's not just going to be condensed for Boston early. It's also going to be very, very tough. It's probably the toughest start I can recall to a Celtics season. It's basically, there's not a lot of games in December, but there's no easy games in December. January is okay with a couple of games against Detroit, Chicago, and Orlando, and then games against the Knicks, Spurs, and Wizards. Really the only easy games out of 16. February only has Sacramento, another game against Washington that are definitely easy out of 15 games, with March closing with the Clippers and Toronto. before All-Star Week. So they are really going to be putting these young guys into a crucible. They'll also be doing it on national television for the large portion of the first half of the schedule, with 18 national TV games. I think it's the most in the league, according to the press release. What are you guys' thoughts about the schedule?
It's, you know, I don't like what this looks like. It's, aside from it being compressed, aside from it being, you know, a lot in a short amount of time, I don't like the travel. I just don't like the, I'm going back to the COVID thing. I don't like the way this is going. But billions of dollars are at stake, so they're going to do this. But look, this is going to be tough. They're going to be struggling without Kemba Walker for a while. This is going to put the real spotlight on Jason Tatum. When you look at the schedule, I think this is pretty clear. And why the Celtics are on national TV 18 times is Jason Tatum. I mean, we're looking at a guy that is hoping to make another jump into MVP consideration. He's third team All-NBA. Now he wants to go first team All-NBA. And not only that's what triggers the contract escalator that'll bring him from 163 to 195. But the focus is on him and him and Jaylen Brown. And it's really going to be on them to carry the team through this stretch. If like, I think Tatum has the potential to really make an early MVP case if he can carry the Celtics and be a 20 to 25 point a game scorer, have some, you know, assists, some signature plays. If he can help the Celtics to a good record early, then with all of the national attention on him, this is the opportunity for him to kind of jump out and people say, hey, wow, well, this kid's really taking off, just signed the big extension, and now look at what he's doing. So if anything that comes out of the schedule is, I'm thinking that if Jason Tatum can rise up, then he has the potential to really make some noise league-wide.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that the beginning of the schedule is a huge run for potential for Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. I think Brown also has to be thrown into that equation, you know, with the departure of Gordon Hayward, with the fact that we're not going to see Kemba Walker for at least a couple of weeks, by the sounds of things. Jaylen has a real opportunity to shore up his status as an all-star in the making. And he's going to get a lot more touches. He's going to be asked to be, I think, a focal point of the team, both on offense and defense. And obviously, you know, Tatum is the guy. The Celtics want him to be the face of the franchise. But, you know, as we've seen in the past, unless you're, you know, a LeBron James or a Giannis Antetokounmpo level player, it's really hard to win against the best teams with just one dude going off. You need to have depth and you need to have quality running mates early in the season. And I think this is a real opportunity for Jaylen to shine. But, you know, and just to say one more thing on this, I think kind of we talk about the loss of Gordon Hayward in the offseason. I think it's fair to say that by the end of his time on the Celtics, Hayward was not as impactful a player as a lot of people, myself included, thought he was going to be at the start. That being said, the loss of Hayward in the offseason, regardless of what you think about him as a player, means that the Celtics' margin for error is a lot smaller than it was. You know, Gordon Hayward missed a lot of time as a kind of injury-prone player. He also averaged 17 points a game on really good efficiency last year. So, and if, you know, with Kemba potentially out for a couple of weeks with a really difficult early schedule, I think this is going to require some young dudes on this team that maybe we didn't have as immediate expectations of to, they're going to be tested early. I think you're going to see whether Aaron Nesmith or Peyton Pritchard are ready to go very quickly. I think you're going to see an increased role for Grant Williams. I think you're going to have to figure out what you have in Robert Williams as well.
That is a thing that is not getting mentioned. Robert Williams doesn't really fit into this rotation very well. And I'm really curious to see how he's going to be used. That was the thing I've been trying to find out for the last several pressers. Haven't been able to ask that question yet. But speaking of the pressers for Media Week, we had some really good ones. I wanted to talk specifically about Tristan Thompson's and a particular interruption. If maybe you could talk about that a little bit, John. I thought that he's really like, I remembered him from when we were playing the Cavs, when the Celtics were playing the Cavs fairly often in the postseason. But I didn't really pay attention to him in the same kind of a way that you do when a guy is on the team that you follow. And he's really interesting. He is thoughtful. He puts a lot of time into answering his questions. And he's really, he's got some, I won't say it's a tick, but a tendency to mention a certain player that I'm surprised people are not getting rubbed the wrong way by it. Maybe you could talk about that.
LeBron?
Yes.
So yeah, I think the interruption you're talking about is when I was asking Tristan about, I was trying to make the comparison. You played with LeBron. Now you're playing with Jason Tatum, who wants to become LeBron-like, although nobody's LeBron, you know. And I just wanted to say, like, hey, you played with this great guy. You want to play with it. You're playing with this guy who wants to be great. What can you impart on him? So the way I phrased it was, you played with arguably like one of the greatest players of all time, and he leans in and goes, the best player of all time. Which, hey, you know, you got that firsthand knowledge. That's how you want to play it. That's fine with me. A lot of people will make that same argument. I think people, like, I know that there's pushback with LeBron stuff in Boston. A lot of people do not like LeBron James, but whatever your opinion of LeBron James, it is unmistakable that he is at least one of the best players in NBA history. You don't want to put him number one? That's fine. Even if you want to put him number five, I don't care, because the fifth best player in NBA history is still one of the greatest players of all time. So wherever you want to rank LeBron, like, even your hate can't push him that far down the list. So look, Tristan Thompson played with LeBron at his peak and won a championship with LeBron. And so he has inside knowledge of what it's like to be great, what it's like to be around a great, an all-time great, and what it takes for a guy like that, the work that he puts in, the way he handles his teammates, the way he just carries himself, like, that is important stuff to me. And you're right, Tristan is a very thoughtful guy with his answers, and I'm not used to that around the Celtics, because they really like to play it close to the vest. Anytime they can throw out a stock cliche answer, they'll do it. That's how they want to operate. They don't want any headlines. They don't want any controversy. They want all the stories to just kind of like be medium level, you know, whatever. They don't want to have big headlines and, ooh, this quote was great. Like, but Tristan Thompson is he actually thoughtfully answers his questions. And when he answers his questions mentioning LeBron, he speaks obviously very highly of him. He has a very high opinion of LeBron. He appreciated the time he played with LeBron, and he thinks that having played with LeBron, he gives him a lot to offer the Boston Celtics. And I think that's part of why they brought him in. They brought him in for that, and they brought him in because he was on that Cavaliers team that was down 3-1 and came back to beat a 73-win team. And they brought him in because the Celtics had multiple 20-point leads in the Eastern Conference Finals, and they blew them all, and they had mental lapses and stupid turnovers. And I don't think it's any surprise that Tristan Thompson from that team that came back from 3-1 is here now to show these guys, hey, this is mentally in those situations, this is how you got to carry yourself. Not what you guys just did against Miami, because frankly, that loss to Miami pissed Danny Ainge off. And you can tell. And bringing Tristan Thompson in, I think, is a direct result of that.
Absolutely. You know, I really like the Tristan Thompson signing this offseason. I think, you know, the Celtics offseason, for my money, did not look super good after Hayward signed on to the Charlotte deal. And it was a way to really kind of rebound, so to speak. I think the Tristan Thompson fit is going to be a really good one. I talked to some Cleveland fans after that happened. Yes, they do still exist. You know, the things that they mentioned were that Tristan, for all of his off the court affairs, shall we say.
Oh, you're just killing us today, man.
Tristan, for all of that, you know, he was beloved in Cleveland as a teammate, even after LeBron left. A lot of the young dudes there viewed him as a kind of leader, both kind of on the court and in the locker room. I saw some footage from Cavs games last year while I was kind of watching highlight videos, trying to see what Tristan might bring to the team. And, you know, there's stuff where Tristan is in the huddle. He's diagramming plays. He's telling dudes where they need to be. You know, I think this is Danny Ainge. I think, John, you just kind of spoke to this. Danny Ainge wanted to get guys who are battle tested, who have been in the trenches and who really know how to win in the games that matter. And if there's anything that we've seen from Tristan Thompson's career, it's that he is a good guy to have in those games. I think you can have him on the floor in the critical moments of, you know, the East Finals or the NBA Finals, maybe. You know, he can be that guy. He's a really smart teammate. It seems like everybody in the locker room likes being around him. And I'm really excited to see what he can bring both to the team and to the press docket. You know, I think you're definitely right to say that the Celtics have adopted kind of the Belichick way of handling the press conferences for the most part. But I think Tristan can provide some really positive energy to this team and really help them take the next step.
Teague actually kind of fits the bill of the not really saying much while saying things, at least in his introductory presser. He talked about how he's a fun guy, I think, several times. He did say some interesting things besides that. He has been going to see Jaylen Brown play since he was in Wheeler High School, which I thought was pretty interesting. And also, speaking of Wheeler High School, Jaylen Brown started his availability speaking about changing the name of Wheeler High. Wanted to get you guys' thoughts on him doing stuff like that.
I mean, Jaylen Brown is my favorite player on this team. I think the stuff that he does off the court is as important, if not more so, than the stuff he does on the court. I think his teammates really respect his vision and his leadership, particularly with stuff like with the NBA Players Union, where he's now a vice president. And, you know, he's kind of emerged in the wake of some of the kind of Black Lives Matter protests that the NBA has been working with. He's really emerged as a leader on that front. I think his teammates respect it, and I think they're kind of empowered by how open and how kind of serious he is about that work. So, you know, the more the better when it comes to Jaylen Brown, the activist. I'm thrilled that he's going to keep it going, and I'm happy that he's going to be on this team for at least a few more years doing that.
I think he carries on a little bit of a tradition of Boston Celtics activism going back to the days of Bill Russell. This is important work that he's doing, and it's important that people understand the type of work that he's doing. Okay, so renaming Wheeler High School, excuse me, very important work, because you don't want to honor a Confederate general, the people who fought to keep slavery. That is something that on one level really sends a message of like, look, we're going back to the beginning, and we're going to erase some of these mistakes. He is not concerned with surface level stuff. He's not trying to chop the head off the dandelion. He's trying to pull it out by the roots. And I think one thing that is extraordinarily important. The work that he's doing is the work with kids and schools and education reform.
Yes.
And bringing STEM, that program with NASA Goddard that he's working on to bring STEM curriculum to underserved communities. I remember this from when I was in school, that you have this tiered section. When I was in middle school, you had the seventh grade going from 701 to 714. And 714 was, you know, the path to like a vocational technical high school. And the 701s were like the advanced kids. And what made those tiers? Like, you've already predetermined our lives. Yep. And that is horrible. Now, at the time, we sit there and we say, all right, I'm in the 701s and I'm in the 710s and, you know, whatever. You just go along your business. And you look back and you're like, wow, Jalen is right. That is horrible to put everybody in those tiers like that. And then you go to certain communities where the bottom tiers look similar and the top tiers look similar. And it's no surprise that a lot of white kids are in the top tiers and a lot of black kids are in the bottom tiers. And what does that have to do with? That's opportunity. That's systemic holding back people from not just the young age, from generations. So Jalen Brown's focus on giving these kids in these communities equal opportunity is the basis for all of his activism. That's where he wants to go. He wants to make sure no special treatment, no nothing. It's equal treatment. Give everybody the same opportunity, and then it'll shake out how it shakes out. But it's important to give everybody the exact same opportunity. So I commend Jalen Brown for doing that kind of work at a high level and using a platform that he has to make that happen. He understands that this is his window of opportunity, and he's seizing it. And I think it's impressive.
I could not be happier he's on the team. As a journalist, I'm not supposed to inject my political opinions into the work that I do, but having someone who is already doing that kind of thing for us, it really makes me happy because, as you said with Bill Russell, he's my favorite Celtic all around because of what he did off the court as much as, if not more than what he did on the court. And to see kind of a second coming, if you will, of that on the Celtics now, it's just been an absolute joy to cover. Speaking to your point about tracking, I grew up really poor. I was put into the VOAG kind of, you're never going to go to college, track things. And, you know, through a lot of hard work and a little bit of systemic racism, I was able to get a PhD. And I say a little bit of systemic racism because I was poor. And I did dumb crap when I was a kid, like shoplift, and I got caught. And when I got caught, I was put on probation and not sent to juvenile hall. And then when I didn't get to my meetings on time, instead of ending up into the criminal justice system on a permanent basis, they gave me a bicycle so I could get to my meetings on time. So, mm-hmm. You know, that's what happens to me. And for my whole life, until I got to college and started learning about systemic racism, it didn't even occur to me that this was not normal for a large chunk of the population. And you don't see that kind of a thing. So for him to use his platform in the way that he does, to not just raise awareness, but to systematically go after the root that creates these kinds of situations, I think that's absolutely critical. I don't want to go too deep into Jalen's activism, but we really should sometime maybe do a whole pod on it.
Let me know when you want to do that pod. I'm happy to be a part of that.
It's important stuff.
Agreed. But there is also some very important stuff of an entirely different sort going on with Boston. It was one of the first pressers that we had for Media Week, and that would be Kemba Walker, who I feel so bad for him because every presser he's in now, it's the only questions he gets for the most part. But I mean, it's kind of unavoidable because he takes up a significant chunk of the Celtics cap space and they're going to need the best they possibly can get out of him. But we're not really sure exactly what we're going to see from his knee. We do know that he was going to be operating under this January protocol that they initially thought, is my understanding of how they kind of scheduled this stem cell injection. Now, I am a doctor, but I am not a medical doctor, so I don't really know crap about this kind of stuff. But maybe, John, you might be able to give us some background, since I know that you've worked through some injury as a basketball player in your past and have also spoken to some people about things like this previously.
Sure.
What's going on with his knee?
They won't say. That's the one thing that stands out. You ask Kemba, try to ask a bunch of different ways, and they will not say exactly what it is. You try to infer from the stem cell injection that it is typically some kind of treatment for arthritis. So when you think about the plan, the stem cell injection, which promotes healing, the strengthening around the knees, when you're doing a strengthening program like that, you're trying to get the muscles to handle more of the shock of the stops and starts. When the muscles are stronger, they can hold the mechanism of the joint in place. When the muscles aren't strong enough, that's when the bone, if you're dealing with an arthritic situation, the bone is more likely to start hitting. But if the muscles can keep that in place, you're going to get less of that bone-on-bone reaction. I can tell by the look in your face, you know how painful that is. That is, the plan is to strengthen the leg to make sure the leg is handling the load of the shock. Every time you jump, I believe you put 10 times your body weight of stress on your joints. And every time you run, it's like 5 to 6 times your body weight. So these stops and starts, just it's a constant, think of like a piston kind of like pumping. I like to use the example of a wire hanger, where if you bend a wire hanger enough, eventually it'll snap.
Yep.
And that's the, when we talk about load management, that's the phenomenon that I'm talking about. If you don't stop bending the wire hanger, it will eventually break. You have to like stop for a while so it can last longer. And so I think the approach with Kemba, and also when I hear that they aren't doing any surgery, that tells me that it's not a tendon. It's not something that can be repaired through, you know, you get like a cadaver tendon like they would do in a Tommy John surgery. You know, you replace something or suture something or whatever. Like, that's not what's happening with him. So this is pain management. This is something that I think is, frankly, the wear and tear of a small guard who has played a lot of basketball in his life. And this is what happens to small guards at this age. It starts to break down, and it starts to break down quickly. So I think while I'm concerned about his knee, there is almost a little bit of like, well, if I don't want to say it's only arthritis, but if they can find the plan, if the stem cell injection works and they can continue this type of course of action, they can manage the pain. And if Tatum and Brown and Marcus Smart and Neesmith can be a shooter and Grant Williams can be a glue guy, and you know, Tristan Thompson can catch a few lobs, like that can get you through, then you can spend the next couple of seasons with Kemba managing his knee, getting through a regular season, saying, whatever. And then hopefully by the playoffs, he's ready to go and everything is strengthened to an appropriate point.
So yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I just think that the focus on Kemba's role is as important as the focus on Kemba's knee kind of going forward. John, you were just speaking to that effect, but a lot of the reason that this is such a big season for the Celtics young guys, for Brown and Tatum and Williams, is because Danny Ainge in the front office, I have no doubt, want to keep Kemba on ice for as long as they possibly can. I think if they need to bring him back to get him in rhythm and to get some wins, they probably will if things are not going well by, say, the first few weeks in the season. But If they can afford any wiggle room here, if Tatum and Brown make the jump that we kind of hope that they can, and if they can afford to kind of keep Kemba just working on the leg to get it as strong as possible for the playoffs so that they don't have the kind of flame out that they, and in particular Walker, had in the Eastern Conference Finals, I think that's the optimal scenario for them. And maybe that speaks to kind of the long-term planning for this team's future, finding ways to add players to the roster that will kind of lighten Kemba's minutes and games played burden. I think his contract at this point is among the harder to trade contracts in the league. So
until people see him play, I think, yeah,
absolutely. So I think it's reasonable to think that, knowing that it's going to be really hard to trade Kemba, it now becomes a question of how do you build the roster out as much as possible to maximize his effectiveness for when it matters.
This is, you know, I just want to add to that, because if you look at 34.3 million this year, 36 next year, and a player option for 37.6 the year after that, it's a lot of money for a guy that, if this is how it's going to be for the next three seasons, then really what you're paying for is the playoff performance. And if you win a championship in that 3 years, then great, fine. Then none of this matters. But when you're looking at his money and how you're allocating your salary, $36 million for a guy that's going to be kind of limited during the regular season is not money well spent. So now you start looking at the, if Kemba shows this year that this is manageable, it's fine, with a normal offseason, he can manage it. And then next regular season, you know what? Maybe he doesn't play back-to-backs. Okay, fine. That's not a big deal. You've got talent behind him that can handle that. It's fine. There are no back-to-backs in the playoffs. You deal with it. Then, okay, then it's okay. The problem is that if it's less than okay and you can't trade him, you don't have the tools behind you to really make big splashes. They got Tristan Thompson this year because Gordon Hayward left, and that opened up enough space for them to sign him to the full mid-level and hard cap themselves. So but without having to like worry about that hard cap so much. They can't do that next year, because next year you've got Jaylen Brown's big extension, Jason Tatum's big extension, which right now is at 28 million, but can go up to over 30 million. Marcus Smart for one more year. If you still got Kemba on the books, you can't hard cap yourself, because now you're doing some real cap gymnastics. You won't be able to sign anybody. So the Kemba Walker situation is really worth watching, because if he's less than okay this year and the Celtics lose confidence in him being okay, they may have to pay to offload him and see if an Oklahoma City type team exists next year that's willing to accept a couple of assets so you can get him off of your books, and maybe you turn Kemba into two useful players or a trade exception that you use to acquire those players. But that becomes an issue next offseason that we have to watch.
It'll be costly too, because really the only draft assets Boston has left are its own picks of any value. And those aren't even going to necessarily be anywhere near the lottery, hopefully. So
right,
because of that, you're going to have to give up one of the better young talents. I mean, this could be like Grant, this could be Rob, this could be Romeo. It's going to be somebody that they at least think that stands a very good chance of becoming rotation player in the right term.
Which at that point, you might just say, look, we have to suck it up. And then maybe you wait one more year, Kemba opts in and he becomes the expiring contract. And you just say, look, at least the expiring contract has value. So you might have to spend one season of less than optimal Kemba just because you can't trade him at that point. You have to wait one more year. So, and that handcuffs you a little bit, because now you have the taxpayer mid-level versus the non-taxpayer, and that, you know, one less player that you can bring in. And look, yeah. Jason Tatum could be an MVP candidate, and that might eliminate a lot of this stuff. But if he is in that 6 to 10 range, and, you know, Jaylen Brown's an all-star, but you still feel like, God, we need that one more guy. This puts you in a position where you can't have that one more guy.
Yeah, no, it's definitely going to be tricky, and it's going to dictate a lot of how the next couple of seasons shape up for the Celtics. I want to go back to a point that I think Justin made, you know, in talking about, and we talked about this on the last pod that we did, traded player exceptions and kind of how you can use those. Obviously, the Celtics still have a pretty massive trade exception from Gordon Hayward's sign and trade to the Charlotte Hornets. You know, it's as much a function of who's out there as anything else, but maybe if you're Danny Ainge thinking about how to use that trade exception, you have to consider kind of what Kemba's long-term plan is there and whether it's maybe wise to use that trade exception on somebody who could fill minutes at the guard spot. Now, that being said, I think one thing to keep in mind is that the Celtics already have a point guard on the roster in Marcus Smart, who offers some real value. You know, this is a potentially first-team all-defense player whose three-point shot has improved basically every year that he's been in the league, and is kind of he's going to be in a much bigger role this year than I think he has been in prior seasons. He's also only 26 years old, so maybe the long-term answer to the guard spot is already on the roster. But even so, if that's the case, then you have to figure out how to maximize the effectiveness of Kemba, who's being paid a much bigger salary than Marcus Smart. And if Marcus Smart is your long-term plan at point guard, then that probably means that you're looking to move on from Kemba sooner rather than later.
We also have one other thing that we'd really like to talk about, and it's related to great Celtics players more generally. In fact, all time. John, you recently published a book, The Boston Celtics All-Time All-Stars, The Best Players at Each Position for the Seas. I wanted to talk with you a little bit about how the book came into existence, like what made you want to write it, and a lot of other details. You could tell us a little bit about how you wrote it.
Well, I was actually approached to write the book by the publisher. They just launched this series of all-time all-stars. I think at this point, only the Green Bay Packers all-time all-stars exists. And so this is the first of their NBA series. And I was approached with just the topic. Hey, we want to do a book on the all-time all-stars, Boston Celtics. They were familiar with my writing, and they asked me if it's something I'd be interested in doing. I love Celtics history, so I thought that would be great. But the formula, the approach, and all of that was all up to me. And what I decided to do was make it like a real all-star team and not just go 1 through 12. These are the best players. I decided to say an all-star team has 12 players. And so there are 5 positions. So I'm going to do the starting 5, their backups at each position, and give myself 2 wild cards to add a couple of guys in. I also picked 2 coaches. So you have a coach and an assistant. And it really was just an exercise of trying to, like, you go back to the beginning and you look at who were the best players in all of these generations. And then you try to sort of correct for the league as it was in the beginning, which was 8 teams, and what level of player success can be somewhat attributed to the lack of competition, the lack of integration, and different factors back then that kind of allowed for certain players to maybe have a bigger role. What was your impact on the team? What was your impact on team history? And you know, just trying to whittle away some of the noise as best I could. I'll tell you, I came into that thinking I knew for a fact that certain guys were going to be on this team. And at the end, I was like, I have to leave these people off. And like pains me to leave some of these people off, but how do you pick 12 people out of all of Celtics history? It's hard. And there are some overlooked people that when you really dive into everything that they accomplished, like this person needs to be on this team. And that means there's no room for somebody else.
So maybe you could give us one person. I won't ask you to name, you know, we want to read your book, but maybe you could name one person who either did or did not make the list that surprised you.
I'll tell you that I did have to play with positions a little bit.
Okay.
So we're looking at, let's look at the small forwards. So you think about small forwards in Celtics history, and there are three that come to mind right away. In chronological order, John Havlicek, Larry Bird, Paul Pierce. Now, what the hell am I supposed to do with that? Because I got two spots. I've created this hole for myself with two spots for each position. And I only got two wild cards. So how do I make this work? Well, John Havlicek spent half of his career also listed as a shooting guard. So maybe I have to go out there and say, all right, well, maybe Havlicek makes this team and Larry Bird makes his team and Paul Pierce makes his team by shifting positions a little bit. And so that opens things up, which now creates one more opening on the wildcard team. So without giving too much away, I will say that there is one Celtics legend that everybody loves make this team that by switching Havlicek to a shooting guard, I was able to fill this guy in as a wild card. And I feel like it was an appropriate honor, especially considering the events of this past 2020.
Sounds to me like your book is taking a page out of Brad Stevens' positionless basketball philosophy.
You know, I could redo this as point guards, wings, and bigs and come up, honestly, with a completely different, not completely different list, but like that's where you can kind of finagle with things. There are obvious guys, right? Like the starting five, knowing that I put Havlicek as a starting shooting guard, you can infer that Bob Cousy, Havlicek, Bird, you know, Bill Russell, those are starters. Power forward, you say, okay, maybe there's a little bit of a debate there. The real question is the backups. Who backs up Bob Cousy? Because there are some really good point guards in Celtics history. Who do I leave off from Celtics history? You know, I've got JoJo White. I've got Dennis Johnson. One of those guys doesn't make it. You know, I've got other players. I got power forwards like crazy. I've got centers like crazy. You know, Robert Parrish, Collins. You know, there are names here that's like, wait, you're going to leave this guy off? Like, so it's a hard practice. It's a hard exercise. I don't want to reread the book because I'm going to look at it and be like, no, I made a wrong choice here.
Well, so, if there's one thing I know that I can peg for certain, locked in, I guarantee this is the case. The Celtics commentating team all time is set. Rest in peace, Tommy Heinsohn.
Yes. I mean, come on. It's got to be Mike and Tommy. Like, that's – although – I mean, Johnny Most. How do I leave Johnny Most off of this? I didn't pick a commentating team, but like, how can you leave gravelly voiced Johnny Most? You can't. You know, that's he's give the Johnny soundtrack the to some of the best moments in Celtics history. So I can try a three-man booth, but like, so yeah, even see that's how legendary this franchise is. Even picking a broadcast team, I'm going to have to leave somebody beloved off of that team.
Sorry, Scalabrine. Well, how is it different to write a book on sports rather than covering on a beat or a blog? Because I mean, like for me, I actually got into writing about the Celtics as an exercise to warm up for my dissertation. And then it kind of just took off. But that's, you know, even those kind of things were very different in how I approached writing. So I imagine it's really different compared to covering, you know, like a beat.
Yeah. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of writing. I spent a lot of time in Cafe Nero in Somerville, sitting there, sucking down coffee after coffee, going out, like eating like three meals in there, because that was just a space that was conducive to my work. I feel like I write in a conversational style as it is. And I feel like my writing is more conversation with a person than it is a manuscript that, you know, it's like a scroll, a parchment that you read out loud. Like that, I come from a TV background. And so I'm used to looking into a camera and talking to people. And so when I write like I speak. And this is just me putting into words a lot of the things that I would want to say about these players. And so the difference in writing this book, and I'll also say this, writing this particular book is different than writing other books where people have to do a ton of interviews. I only did a couple of different interviews because this is such an opinion-based book. This is just me arguing with myself. So this book was really like 50 to 60,000 words of me doing what I do in 1,000 words every day. So it's mostly just me going back and forth with myself. But however, there's a ton of research that goes into it, like old interviews and finding quotes from old interviews that kind of highlight what I'm trying to say. And I did do a couple of interviews with people who were around that time and who were, you know, in on some of these guys' careers. So research wise, it did take a lot, because how do I determine, you know, Bill Sharman, who played in the, you know, 50s, how do I figure him out versus, you know, Danny Ainge or, you know, whomever, and, you know, some of the more current players. You got to dive into that and not just look at the numbers and say, well, oh, his shooting percentage was terrible. Well, everybody's shooting percentage was terrible back then. Why? What's the context? So it's that level of research that probably the take what I do for a regular piece on Mass Live and multiply it by 100. And that's basically the process of writing this book.
So where can we find it?
Anywhere books are sold, my friends. Everywhere books are sold. You can go to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, bookshop.org if you're looking to support some of the smaller booksellers. And I think it's starting to appear on shelves. So if you can safely find your way into a socially distanced, face covering bookstore, you may see it on shelves. I might at some point soon try to walk through a bookstore to have that ego boosting feel of seeing my book on a shelf. It is still surreal, but I haven't even gotten my shipment. They give me a few books that I can hand out, but it should be available in physical stores soon, but you can order it online and it will ship within a week at this point.
Very cool. So in time for Christmas.
Yes, indeed. So you want to get a gift for a Celtics fan, this is the great way to do it.
Indeed. Anything else that we are working on?
Just no big projects. No big projects. Just getting ready for the season. So and of course the Locked On Celtics podcast, which I do daily. So
thank you for that, by the way.
Yeah.
Good talk. No, it's my pleasure. If you can't tell, I enjoy talking quite a bit. So anything that, you know, the fact that people want to listen to the things I have to say, great. I'll keep talking. I'll just keep going. You're going to have to stop me.
Speaking of podcasts, I am going on the Off the Glass Outlet podcast on, I think, Tuesday is when we're scheduled to do that, where I'm going to be talking with Nick Faye and Corey Waldron about the saddest division in the NBA. And I'll let you guess what that is, but we're going to be doing just kind of preview for how that division is going to shape up in this season. And we'll see.
I should also mention this will be our first podcast where we will also be on the Off the Glass Network, which is pretty cool. And of course, you can always find my stuff on the Celtics Wire, as always. You can find the pod on most podcatcher apps. Please subscribe so you don't miss an episode. And if you like what you hear, please rate us 5 stars. If you don't like something or have a suggestion, you know the drill, or maybe you don't, CRPOD with a hashtag or on any article anywhere you can see the podcast. We're always trying to bring you the deepest dives into Celtics coverage, and hopefully we have. Take care, y'all.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.